Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits. And welcome to another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Okay, look, 7-8 years ago, I had to step into the fear and put a big-ass goal out there, and so I decided to start climbing all these crazy mountains around the world. It's been an absolute amazing journey, and you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've actually done 6 of the 7. I've actually been on Denali twice. I've been on climb successfully Kilimanjaro twice, but now it's Mount Everest, the biggest boy on the block, 29,000 plus, and I'm headed over there April 2020, and I'm totally keyed up. I'm keyed up because I've been doing all this preparation. I train like an absolute bear and really putting myself in a position of success. I'm going to be climbing with one of the top climbing outfitters in the world. Excited about that. And just the mountain has fascinated me for years, I'm sure like others, but really excited to do so. And so if I can actually pull this thing off, I'd be the first NFL player to do so. And so as we speak today, there's not that many first in the world, so I look forward to tackling that. Okay, so that's one. Two is I totally appreciate the listen on these different podcasts. I really do, and it's been an amazing journey, as I said, from not just interviewing these people, but being on the other side of the mic and really taking in their incredible stories of doing amazing things. And look, we all need to be inspired. And so if I can help provide and find more people that meet that criteria, all the better. And it just, we all need that motivation. And we all need that those words of encouragement that you can make it back relevant to your own situation and then plow forward in whatever endeavor you are trying to do. Okay, so I appreciate that. And if you want to find out anything that I have going on, you can do so at markpattisonnfl.com. I've got a book out now called Finding Your Summit, go figure. And it is essentially the playbook to what I had learned from my Hall of Fame coaches on how to emerge and do some great things in your life. It doesn't have to be mountain climbing, of course. It can be anything, but it's a plug-in that you take on these different things, these different goals, that these different strategies that I've set forth, that they set forth for me, and good things can come from that. Okay. Also on the website, you can find out more about my expedition. Obviously, I'll be going to Mount Everest, and we'll have more information about that coming up. There's an e-learning course, and of course, the podcast. And when you go to the podcast, you will find an iTunes tab, and I would be so grateful if you go in and you'd rate and review. Now, it all has to do with visibility, popularity of podcasts, because there's so many podcasts out there today that it's so easy to get lost and like, wait, where's Finding Your Summit? And I think I really do believe these stories are really amazing and incredible and can really give a lift to those people who really need it. And even if you don't, we all need to be motivated and inspired by other people to keep going. So if you'd go in and do that, I would be really, really appreciative. Okay, so let's go listen to the pod. It's going to be awesome. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark. I'm back with another incredible podcast on a guy who I've known for quite some time. He's had quite the success story as well. There's this quote that I read by Henry James. He's an author, and it said, "It's time to start living the life you've imagined." And some people, it takes a lifetime to figure that out. Others, like me, I think really until I was probably in my 50s, really focused and keen on where I'm going between climbing my different mountains and these different businesses that I'm involved in. Certainly playing the NFL didn't help or didn't hurt, but certainly with this guy,
it seems like he's had this plan of attack for a long time and certainly living the dream and doing a lot of the things that a lot of us think about doing and really stepping into the fear, launching companies, and then, of course, having success follow. Today, I've got Scott Svensson from Seattle. I'm beaming all the way from Sun Valley, Idaho. And first of all, Scott, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be on, and thank you for the very generous introduction.
Look, I've started a couple of companies back in my day, and so I understand like the pitfalls of going out, raising money, and then getting other people involved in your different businesses, and where you can get great partners that come along with that ride. You can also get others that get in the way, and those always become obstacles, I guess, in terms of you trying to do something great and following your vision. So the first kind of, let's tee it up by to the audience right now by saying that you and your wife, Allie, are the founders of Seattle Coffee Company that was acquired by Starbucks back in 1998. So let me start with the first and the most obvious thing is this company is a company that you grew in the UK. How did that ever come to be in terms of you, a guy who grew up in Bellevue, Washington, just outside of Seattle, and now you find yourself in the UK growing this company, and then it grows into from one store to many?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's an interesting story. My wife and I are both from Seattle, as you mentioned, and found ourselves living in London. I'd moved over there with a U.S. investment bank, and I cajoled my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, became my wife, into moving over with me. And the first thing she recognized when she moved over were all the things that the UK needed but was missing. And right at the top of that list was a Starbucks-style coffee experience. And having grown up in the Northwest and having been raised on Starbucks coffee, we missed it in the UK. And she put her finger on it when she came over. And for about 4 years after that, we complained pretty loudly to friends and family and others about the absence of a Starbucks-style coffee experience in the UK. And some very good friends of ours came to us. I was on a golf trip with a buddy of mine, and he finally grabbed me and said, "Hey, listen, this idea you keep talking about, this is the deal. You either need to do something about it or you need to quit complaining about it." And I said, "Okay, that's a deal. If you'll partner with me and help us do it, then I'll stop complaining and we'll lean into it." Uh-huh. And that started the journey of us bringing to life what became Seattle Coffee Company, which is our interpretation of a Starbucks-style coffee experience in the UK. There was nothing like it in the UK at the time. There was nothing like Starbucks outside of the United States at the time. And so we committed ourselves to seeing if we could bring it to life in the UK. And it was the beginning of a fun, exciting entrepreneurial journey.
So how many stores did you ultimately get it up to before Starbucks came in?
So over about a 2.5 year period, we built it to about 85 locations. And that was spread primarily in the UK, but we also had partners who had opened stores in South Africa, Southeast Asia, and the Middle East.
Yeah, so I had Howard Behar on the pod a couple of weeks ago. And for those who don't know, Howard Behar, to me, really is known as the Big Three. Howard Schultz, the CEO, and I'd say really founder of the expansion concept of Starbucks, and another guy, Oren Smith, really were the three key energizer bunnies that really made Starbucks go. And the question I asked to him was really simple. I go, look, there's all these other competitors that have come and gone. And I brought up Chili's as an example of trying to really take on Starbucks. And so, you know, from your standpoint, you go in, you just like Chili's did, you recognize there might be an opportunity in the marketplace for a coffee chain to grow and flourish in the UK. You do that, saying that, and I guess being at the dinner table, writing that down, the napkin presentation with a buddy, and actually doing it, pulling it off, and having that cut and paste, that's a whole nother animal. And and so it was interesting to get Howard's response on that. But from your standpoint, you know, what were the separator? I mean, what was the thing, you know, that really got you across the goal line that didn't limit you just to one or two stores and then you capped out and said, okay, well, that's good enough?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. When my wife and I decided to take on this challenge, this opportunity. Neither one of us had any previous retail experience or coffee experience. But what we had was a very clear vision in our minds of what we wanted to bring to life. And despite skepticism by a lot of smart people, we kind of stayed true to that vision and really worked hard to bring something to life that we felt we weren't pursuing a business opportunity. It was started as a true longing for something we missed from our time in the States. And so we stayed true to that. My wife was fabulous in kind of helping us craft the vision that we stayed true to. And then we kind of reverse engineered it. We said, what's the kind of business that we've never built a business before. We've never been entrepreneurs before. If we're going to do this and do it for the first time, what's the kind of business we want to build? Something we would be proud of. So we kind of reverse engineered it. And between having a clear vision of what we wanted to bring to life in terms of the customer proposition, and then thinking about the type of company we wanted to build, how we wanted to treat our people, our reason for being, those two things combined really gave us the clarity of vision and purpose, I think, that led us to having that conviction. And then the thing unfolded so quickly in front of us. I mean, I'll tell you, we've learned so much on our entrepreneurial journey, and this was at the very beginning of it. We made every mistake you can imagine. But again, we looked at those mistakes as opportunities to learn and grow and improve, not as barriers or not as excuses not to continue. They were just, it was the tuition we were paying to get better. And so the other thing I would tell you is we went into this knowing that failure was not an option. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly how focusing and energizing it is when you know that you have a lot of options in front of you, but one of them is not failure. Because we were young, we'd had a successful career up until that time, but we put all of our eggs in this one basket. And we kind of said, "This, we're going to make this work." And by the way, we don't have a fallback plan. And so when times got tough or when things looked a little iffy, we just put our heads down and said, "All right, well, the answer is we're going to make this work. So let's now figure out how we're going to get it done."
Well, certainly that falls into the theme of this podcast, Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And I think one of those keys too, and there's never just one, but failure is not an option. That certainly was a model that you guys live by, but also having that supportive spouse, girlfriend, then became your spouse,
yeah,
your wife.
Yeah.
Even though that women, generally speaking, are more, they're innate to nesting and wanting to have that security, then guys maybe are more risk takers. Again, I'm just talking generalities, but when you have somebody in there saying, when a particular day or a store or something doesn't go the way it was supposed to, yet they come back and they're still like all in and not going to bail on it, that goes a long way.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the greatest gift I've had in my personal journey is the fact that I found someone. We actually went to high school together. We've been together since she was 15 and I was 16.
Wow.
And to find that life partner, somebody who, is your kind of proverbial better half, who's a great complement to the way I look at the world, it's been a total gift. But as you say, as we were building this business, the way she looks at the world, her gifts are different than mine. And so it was just a fabulous opportunity. One, if you're going to pour yourself into building a business, it's so intense and it takes everything to do it with your partner and to share that experience was fabulous. And like I said, it's probably the number one gift I've had is one, to travel this journey with her, but two, to work on these businesses. We've done three different businesses together now. And to share that experience, there are times when you have to create some boundaries around not obsessing about the business at all hours, and you got to carve out time for yourself and your family. But there's an awareness and an appreciation and acceptance for all the stuff you're going through. So you don't have to get home and explain it. There's just there's an alignment that it's difficult to explain.
Yeah. Love that. So let's talk about the intangibles just for a second, because I think it's really important, because it's become such a core part on who you and your wife have become in terms of really, the vision board, the motto, whatever you want to call it. But Starbucks had this whole theme about trying to create the third place, right? And with you, it's really about trying to create a place where people are there and with a certain focus about giving back. And so in terms of when you now have all these, you know, 85 plus stores around Europe, UK, you're trying to kind of replicate the experience that you guys had back in the States because you missed it. Like, how do you put that into X's and O's in a storefront that's not an identical replica of what Starbucks as we know it today here in the States?
Well, yeah. So, you know, as we jumped in to start building the business, you know, we really, once we committed to doing it, we put our own thumbprint on the culture and the style and the way it came to life. And it was, listen, it was inspired by Starbucks and I love those guys. And, you know, Howard Behar is one of my favorite people of all time. And I was very fortunate that when they ultimately bought our business, he was the one I worked with very closely and I got to spend a lot of time with them. And again, that was another gift. But when we decided to do it, we really made it our own. And so Seattle Coffee Company had a very different vibe and personality than Starbucks. You know, we sold a lot more food and it just had a more European kind of gritty, you know, kind of feel to it. It was great. And you know, we carved out a path for ourselves that we thought was relevant given our knowledge of the UK and, you know, it worked. We caught a little magic in the bottle and I don't know exactly how we did it. Sometimes these things just come together in a way where you can't fully explain it, but it was the right time. It was the right idea. And it kind of exploded. I think we get more credit in hindsight than we were due. You know, this idea of bringing today, if you walk into most cities around the world and you talk about the Starbucks style experience, people can't imagine not having it. Well, we happen to be in one of the biggest cities in the world where we could see that, but it didn't exist. So bringing that concept was not, you know, it wasn't rocket science and it wasn't some brilliant insight. And in hindsight, people gave us, I think, like I said, more credit than we were due, but it was a magical ride.
Well, certainly, truth be told, Howard Schultz was inspired by being somewhere in Italy, Verona or someplace, being inspired by sitting in a coffee shop, right? So that's where a lot of that came down. So you put this whole business concept together. You've got a great partner and your wife. You launch these things. You're starting to see success. Next thing you know, you've got 85 stores. And the next thing, Starbucks comes in and says, "Hey, we'd like to acquire you." And that must have been a nice surprise.
Yeah, you know, we'd always looked up to them, admired them, and also we're a little bit paranoid of them because we just assumed that once they got around to coming to the UK, that they would kind of wipe the streets with us, and that, you know, they were so good at what they did, and we were just figuring it out, and so we were paranoid about them eventually coming over and kind of taking the market over, but. We operated, you know, we grew quickly. We got to the point where when they looked and saw us in the UK and then they saw us popping up in Singapore and in the Middle East and elsewhere, I think they turned and said, "Wow, we've got to take note of these guys." And Orrin Smith said it to me most directly. He said, "We are setting out to build the world's most loved and enduring brand. And we know that to do that, we need to be able to be successful in two key markets globally. One is in Tokyo, where we are. They had just expanded into Japan several years before, and that was their focus. The other is in London, and that's where you guys are. And so we know that if we're going to fulfill our mission, we need to figure out how to work in the UK, and we're either going to compete with you or we're going to work with you." And there's this theory in multi-unit retail and a first mover advantage. The brand that gets out first and acquires key real estate and builds its brand with the consumer has a lot of advantages. And once those advantages are in place, it's hard to overcome them if you're coming into the market second or third.
Yeah.
Starbucks knew that. And so we had this great conversation. I mean, we'd always, like I said, they'd inspired us. We always looked up to them. So between meeting Howard Behar, and if you spent time with him, he's just the most inspiring, incredible human. Orrin Smith, who similarly, while, you know, sad that he has passed recently, just an incredible gentleman. And then we spent 3 days with Howard Schultz. You know, as you said, H2O, the magic formula that led to the success of Starbucks, Howard and Orrin.
Yep.
And at the end of that, we concluded, you know, these are people that we would love to work with. And so we agreed that working together versus working against was the right outcome, and pretty quickly came to an amicable agreement about combining the businesses, and we sold to them, and we became their springboard into launching Starbucks into Europe and the Middle East and now Africa.
Hey, this pod is sponsored by Laird Superfoods. So many products to choose from your InstaFuel, your coffee, your tea, your smoothies. And I love the superfood creamer and use the hydration powders like the beets, the coconut, the matcha, the turmeric to mix all into my 7 Summit smoothie. And it's so good. Log on to LairdSuperfood.com and get your 20% off when you use the code MarkP20. Okay? So get your Laird Superfood, and I guarantee it will help fuel your journey.
Well, that's an incredible story of kind of beginning to end in terms of the cycle, the run that you guys had with Seattle Coffee Company. So I would assume that they essentially, once the acquisition happened, they converted the brand from one to the other, meaning Seattle Coffee Company to Starbucks. Is that how that played?
That's right. I stayed with Starbucks for about 2 years. And while I was here, my primary focus was integrating the businesses, coming up with a plan to transition all the Seattle Coffee Company stores to Starbucks, and then putting in place a plan to launch Starbucks into continental Europe. And so today, we had a partner in the Middle East. They converted to Starbucks and have grown incredibly successfully throughout the Middle East and beyond. And we then transitioned the business here. So yeah, that was my focus, and it's all become Starbucks with one small caveat, which is, we had a small partner in South Africa. We had only 3 or 4 stores trading. I introduced Howard Behar to them. And in typical Howard Behar way, he, in a very empathetic approach, said, listen, I appreciate what you guys are doing in South Africa. It is so far away from Seattle, and anything that we're likely to do for the foreseeable future, why don't we just give you guys the latitude to keep building Seattle Coffee Company as long as you stay inside of South Africa? And so they carried on under a license agreement with Starbucks. And today there are over 200 Seattle Coffee Companies in South Africa.
Wow. That's cool. I mean, your legacy continues and goes out into the future. And if you happen to be in South Africa, right, you can go by.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know you have 4 kids, and you can say, hey, kids, look, my wife and I, you know, we are the founders of this brand, and it's pretty cool to see what it has become.
Well, we did exactly that trip about 5 years ago. It was a coincidental thing. We went to speak to an organization in South Africa, turned it into a family trip, and then reconnected with our partners. It was a magical experience. It was like a family reunion. And it was super fun for our kids, who had heard the story of Seattle Coffee Company. Our 2 older boys had been born right around the time that we were building it, but they had never seen it. They didn't really know what it was. So to see it, and the brand looks exactly the same today as it did back then, was a really fun experience. And we've been back to South Africa 2 more times since then. It's become one of our favorite places to go as a family.
Well, look, let's go back to the first thing I started with, which was the quote by this guy, Henry James, and it's time to start living the life you've imagined. And when you start really playing back in slow motion some of the things, to be able to go abroad, to travel all over, to set up stores, to have your own business, to be your own boss, to set a tone and a pace for the people that work under you, then to be associated with a great brand like Starbucks. And I know all 3 of those guys as well as yourself. You know, it's just like all good people. As a matter of fact, when I talked to Howard Behar, we slowly went through his 6 P's. I made him pull them out, and then let's really review on a chalkboard what these things mean. And the first one, I think, part of the 6 P's is people. And, you know, The good things can happen with solid and sound minds sit around a table and really articulate where they're trying to go, and having those visions align, and great things can follow from that. So now you're president of Starbucks Europe for a couple of years. You're helping with the transition. That all happens. And now there's a point in time, I'm sure you could have continued on in that role, but it's time for you and your wife, and I assume at that time, budding family, to hightail it back to the States and move back to your hometown. So What was that decision and why did you want to do that? And then we're going to get into this new business that you're into today, Mod Pizza, and talk all about that.
Yeah. So, you know, we had ultimately lived in the UK for 11 years and loved it. It was a magical experience, but both my wife and I grew up in Seattle. Our family was here. We had two boys at the time on our way to eventually having four of them. And we knew we wanted to raise our family in Seattle. And so when through the transitions with the business, the opportunity came to make that transition back, we did. And I'll tell you, that was a very humbling time because, like I said, we were given more credit than I think we were due for the success of Seattle Coffee Company, but it did give us a lot of opportunities in the UK. We became pretty well known over there. A lot of doors opened for us. And here we were jumping on a plane, flying home, and really turning our back on that. And landing in Seattle, our hometown, where we were really known from our time in high school. And effectively, professionally, starting over again. And I'll never forget flying on the plane and looking at my wife, Allie, and saying, all right, now we have a chance to prove to ourselves whether or not we were just lucky or if we're any good. And, you know, so our journey since we've been back to Seattle has been largely that, which is, you know, bringing to bear all the things we learned while we were in the UK, which we had a fabulous run there, and applying it to our life back in the States, and then refining it. And like you, I love that quote that you led with, you know, living the life that you always imagined and trying to be the architect of that life that you could really get inspired by and be proud of. And that's the journey we've been on since.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's hard. Well, let me go back. I think many times when you are in high school, growing up in college, you're kind of just living in the moment, having fun. Hey, let's go to the frat party. And I think it takes some discipline to really take a step back and really understand where you want to go in life. Right. And part of that is your vision board. I was talking to my daughter who attends the University of Arizona about that last night. You know, it's like, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And once you do that, you can start imagining possibilities. And then you just got to figure out a way to actually execute that vision to make it all happen. And sometimes, you know, it happens in different flavors and not expected as maybe you drew it up on a board at that time. But that's where the fun and the venture starts on how these things can all shape. So now you come back to Seattle with probably a few dollars in your pocket. And as you said, you're essentially had to reinvent what your life was going to look like, having really attained a lot of success in Europe and the UK. And now you land back in Seattle, you start to have your family. And I think that the hard thing, the dangerous thing sometimes is when you have a few dollars in your pocket and you have a million ideas, really to land on that one idea that's going to really propel you forward, because there's so many distractions and maybe you're not so pressed like, oh my God, I've got to go find that job and I got to have to make that paycheck and make rent or make mortgage or whatever. And now you're sitting back and that can, you know, it's a double-sided sword which people can fall on. So how did you evolve from landing, reinvention, trying to figure out how you're going to launch what it is today, a huge pizza empire? And we'll get into that whole story. But I mean, what was the ideation and how was the creation of that idea?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When we came back, there were a couple of things that were different that made that transition a little more challenging. You're right. We'd had some success. And as a result, we had some, you know, financial means to fall back on. And that motivation when we were building Seattle Coffee Company, which was failure's not an option. Well, guess what? Now failure is an option.
Yeah.
And that was something we were very aware of. And man, that can really change your edge, your sharpness. If the going gets too tough, we can always pivot and do something else. And man, that I think there's a subconscious issue there that can really hurt you if you're not careful. So that was a big one. And then also just how do we want to be spending our time? You know, the problem is that in a situation like that, now you've got a lot of options And those options can create distractions and lack of clarity. And that can become not only confusing, but a little bit debilitating. And so I'll tell you, our journey was one of trial and error and kind of trying to figure it out. You know, when we came back to Seattle, we were still pretty young. We were in our early to mid 30s. There was another little episode in there once we sold Seattle Coffee Company and started to transition out of Starbucks. We helped launch and co-found another business in the UK called Carluccio's, which is an Italian deli cafe business. We had a different role there. We were the primary investors behind the business, and we helped the founders build a management team and then develop the business over an 11-year run. And it was a big success. We took it public. And so that was the other kind of context of our UK experiences. We had these two magical experiences, and now we're back in the States. And both of those experiences were in multi-unit retail restaurants. And so the first thing we decided is we're not going to do it, and we're not going to get into the multi-unit retail restaurant business here because it's a fickle industry. It's tough. We're two for two in two magical experiences. If we try it a third time, we'll probably screw it up. So let's do something else. And so that started a process of us investing in and participating in and helping to start and helping to build a number of companies, some of which were successful, some of which were not so successful. And it was kind of this period of time when we were finding ourselves and figuring out, you know, where we could make our impact. And it was somewhat serendipity where someone came to us at a point, and we'd been approached with a lot of ideas in restaurants and retail. And finally, someone came to us with this idea to look at the pizza industry. And for whatever reason, it resonated. We agreed to kind of look into it a little bit. We were skeptical, but we kind of got sucked into it and drawn into it. We've always loved all things Italian, and we love Italian street food. And so it started about an 18-month journey of us exploring this idea. And we finally decided that there was enough there where we thought, listen, let's try this. Like with Seattle Coffee Company back in London a long time ago, let's open one and just see if we can pull something together that might make sense to get behind. And that was in 2007, 2008, where we began this journey of what's become Mod Pizza.
So Mod Pizza, the initial MOD, I think means made on demand. So you go from this, you know, one store, and now today you have over 400 different locations. Are those locations franchises, or are those all company owned?
Yeah, we have about 450 locations as we sit here today, and 80%+ of those are company owned. And then we have nine fabulous franchise partners here in the US who have opened stores with us in key markets. And we have a small number of stores in the UK with a great partner over there.
Yeah, the one thing I really love about, you know, what you guys are doing is that you've got this focus on people more than the pizza that you actually sell, so that they can turn around and give back to communities wherever they are from around the country. So, I mean, it's a wonderful purpose. It's a wonderful motto. It's a wonderful thing for people to really focus on. What are some great examples of that where you can really extract some taking it from this quote to actual things that have happened within communities?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, the best thing that happened to us through this whole experience with Mod, and there's been a lot of great things, was we have discovered the power of purpose, the power and the reward that goes with building a business that is truly trying to accomplish something that's bigger than us, bigger than the people involved, and using business as a platform to make a positive impact on society and on our communities. And when we were building our first few businesses, we were very focused on building a successful company, and we were focused on the culture. How did our people feel? What we didn't do, though, is we didn't have the courage to put that next leg of the stool in place, which is, why do we exist and what difference do we make in the world? And we decided early on, my wife said it, the last thing the world needs is another soulless restaurant chain.
Yeah.
And we have no interest in going out and building a chain of restaurants just to make money. if they're not adding something to the world that the world really needs. And where people, when you open up in their community, they get excited and pumped, not just because you have a great product, but because you represent something, you bring something valuable and different. And so from the very beginning, we started to craft into the business, actually at its very core, this idea of using the business as a platform to make a positive social impact. And I'll tell you, the magic of this, the power of this is when you think about why you start a business, when you think about why you do anything in life, people are in search of happiness. They're in search of contentment and they want to feel good about how they spend their time and the impact they make. And I think a lot of times people imagine that, well, if I can go out and build a business and make a lot of money, then all those things will follow. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, it doesn't work that way. And all the research indicates that once you get beyond a certain basic minimum level of financial security, there's no correlation between money or power, prestige, position, and happiness. But where there is a very strong correlation is with relationships, community, impact, you know, random acts of kindness. Those are the things that do fill your bucket and do give you this incredible sense of gratification. And Ali and I were fortunate to realize that at a stage in our life where we were able to pour that idea into Mod and effectively turn this into a very selfish endeavor where we wanted to build a business that made us feel good and that made us happy and that really gave us gratification. And I'll tell you, yes, we built a successful business and we've been the fastest growing restaurant brand in the country for the past 4 years. But it's not the financial side that gives us any long-term sustainable gratification. It's the impact it's having on people's lives. And I'll tell you, it is like a drug. And you know, they say it's impossible to do something nice for somebody else without making yourself feel better in the process. And I'll tell you, it is so true. And the stories that have come out of Mod of the impact that we've had, and we've used the business as a platform to try to make an impact on people who would otherwise face barriers to employment, or where society has kind of turned their backs on people. Whether or not they've been in jail, they've been homeless, they've had addiction issues, they have neurological or learning disabilities, they've been in foster care, they've been wherever they've come from, there are people who have barriers to employment or barriers to be given the opportunity that they need to become the best version of themselves. And we said, well, hey, we're going to create a pizza place. Can we use this as a platform to make a difference in those people's lives? And very early on, we started that journey, and it's blossomed into this really special thing that, again, give the credit to our team. They took this idea we had and they ran with it, and they've created this culture and this mission that's exceeded our expectations. But that's at the heart of Mod. That's why we exist, and that's why we've grown so quickly, and that's why we work so hard today, is because we really think this model works, and we want to see how far we can take it.
Hey, I'm excited to introduce our new partner of the pod, Cascade Mountain Tech, an outdoor brand from the Pacific Northwest, which is where I'm from, that offers a great selection of trekking poles. They're incredible. Super coolers, camp chairs, LED lighting, and much more. Right now, Cascade Mountain Tech is offering 15% off your first order by using the code FINDINGYOURSUMMIT15. That is FINDINGYOURSUMMIT15 when you check out at CascadeMountainTech.com.
Well, it must be in the playbook somewhere, because just like some of my great coaches, Don James at the University of Washington, Jim Moore Sr., Tom Flores, others, you know, these things just don't, you know, you don't write them down on a piece of paper and then you tack them up on the board and then you walk away. I mean, it's got to be something that's ingrained and taught and retaught and retaught and learned until it's just absolutely ingrained into the fabric of what you're trying to do. And so the leadership that you've learned over the years of really, you know, pushing that down so it really grows upward is, I mean, that's the whole key to making this whole thing work, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you, it's incredible when you bring people in who just need somebody to believe in them. And you believe in them often more than they believe in themselves. And it's incredible how those people will pay you back through their gratitude and their loyalty what a lot of these people have been able to accomplish and what they've shown us is just amazing. And what they want to do then is they want to go pay it forward. They want to go put their hand out and help the next person up. And it's a pretty special thing. And like you said, I think it becomes, there's a cycle to it. We call it the flywheel. And if you can get it moving, we talk about getting people to gratitude. If you give someone a chance and you give them an opportunity to improve themselves and take care of themselves and their family, and they get to a point of gratitude, and they will then turn back and then try to help that next person, you start to create this incredible flywheel. And that's kind of at the essence of MOD and where we are. And we've grown rapidly. A lot of people have said, how do you hold the culture together when you're growing so quickly because you're hiring so many new people and you're bringing a lot of new people into the business? Isn't the culture going to change? And it's because the people who are here care so much about what we're doing and they feel a personal ownership of it that they defend it. And I think that exists in a lot of great organizations or cultures, places like Nordstrom's and Starbucks, and you can go through the list, where people inside of the business defend it because it matters to them. And it, you know, what the business stands for and what they're trying to accomplish matters. And yeah, it's something that we've learned along the way. We didn't know a lot of these things when we started, but you discover them and then you hold on to them and they become an important or an integral part of who you are and what you're about.
I love that. I love that. There's a guy, a former Raider that I played with, Raider great, played 14 years in the NFL, all pro, all world out of UCLA. And when I talked to him about a year ago, I said, Jerry Robinson, how you doing? And the first thing he said is, every single day I wake up with an attitude of gratitude. And I think
that's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. And just by him saying those words, I put a smile on my face. And I was just like, you know, everybody should wake up with an attitude of gratitude. And if you can start your day there, it's just all downhill. I mean, good things are going to come because you see the world through a different kind of lens.
So I think there's something here that more people should talk about. Everybody thinks that if you're successful, then you'll be happy. And the reality is that the inverse of that. And if you unpack that, it all comes back to gratitude. And here's how that works, right? People that are more positive and optimistic are generally happier, and happier people are more successful. And if you get back to the root of optimism and positivity, it's gratitude. If you go out into the world every day and you start by saying, man, I have so much to be grateful for. Isn't this just awesome? The air is clean. The sun is shining. You know, I live in a free country. I've got this great family. What, you know, and you just focus on all that stuff. All of a sudden, you are so positive and optimistic, you can hardly stand it. Now you're feeling good. You go into that next meeting or interaction. That's going to lead you to success. It's not the other way around. And man, if you can start by practicing gratitude, I know it's easy to say, but man, if you can, it unlocks so much. It's the most powerful emotion, I think, out there, because it's just the gateway to so many good things.
Well, if you don't have that, like in your DNA, right, when you're growing up, it's the one thing that you can control. You can't control your height, your weight, what you look like, your IQ, things like that. But you can control your attitude. But I also think the other side of that too is if you're somewhere in the middle or on the other side of that fence, then you can certainly throw another word in there called perspective. And having been in some fairly impoverished areas in Africa, in the US, and when you take a step back and go, wait a minute, maybe my situation isn't quite as bad as what that person's situation. And then all of a sudden it puts things into perspective. And I think that's the other thing that sometimes people lose in the whole scheme of what they're looking at on their portrait.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, one of the greatest causes, I think, of lack of contentment and lack of happiness is comparison.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's watching, you know, well, listen, what I've got is pretty good, but it's not as good as the guy next door. If I could, you know, if I had a bigger car or a bigger house or, and so, like you said, it's trying to get perspective around what's important and what's not important. I think, unfortunately, things like social media and some of these other things have not been really helpful in this regard. But it's powerful stuff.
Yeah. You know, the thing I love though, that what you've done, let's go back to, you know, when you were 16 and your now wife was 15, you met her, you went to the same high school. And she now has become the protector of the purpose. And while you're CEO,
yeah.
I think again, that is such a great title. And I've seen over time, and not that often, but you know, the CEO of happiness or something else. And it's, they're always kind of clever. But I think, you know, as I said before, you got to have somebody who's really toeing the line. That's the police force of what you're in this for. Pizza with a purpose. It's a bigger picture of what you guys are trying to do. And again, I think your challenge is going to be, and it sounds like you've done a great job so far, but you guys have raised a boatload of money to really accelerate the growth of what this company is doing. And as long as you hold those, really the DNA tight to your chest and make sure that it continues to infiltrate throughout, you know, whatever this becomes, 1,000 stores or whatever, you guys are going to be in great shape. And by the way, as we talked about before we went live here, I am located in Sun Valley. I know you get back and forth here at times, but love to see Ahmad pizza with purpose here in downtown Ketchum to like just absolutely I'm a pizza nut, so that's I love pizza. I don't have enough, but love to see that pizza chain here.
We'd love to figure out a way to make that happen, man. Any excuse to get over to Sun Valley and spend time there is a good one.
It's a fantastic one. Well, listen, I've totally enjoyed the conversation. You know, continued success to you and your wife and everybody else that's involved with this project of purpose. And it's just great to talk to one of the good guys out there that really understand what is most important in life. And I think you have a clear sense of what that is, looking through the right lens. And for anybody else out there, can you tell them how they might be able to find a location near them, wherever they might be listening to?
Well, modpizza.com has a great listing. We have a fabulous app that has all of our locations around the country. We're in 27 states, coast to coast. And if we're not in your town or city, we'll hopefully get there soon. But we are spreading modness across the country and really having a heck of a time doing it. So thank you for listening to the story and spending time with me.
Absolutely. All right. There he is, Scott Svensson, CEO of Mod Pizza. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life. And I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great. And remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Attention parents and grandparents. If you're looking for a gift that's more than just a toy, give them something that inspires confidence and adventure all year long. give them a Guardian bike, the easiest, safest, and number one kids bike on the market. With USA-made, kid-specific frames and patented safety technology, kids are learning to ride in just one day. No training wheels needed. It's why Guardian is America's favorite kids bike and the New York Times and Wirecutter's top pick 3 years in a row. This holiday season, Guardian is offering their biggest deal of the year. Up to 40% in savings on all bikes, plus $100 in free accessories. Guardian bikes have become the most sought-after gifts of the season, and inventory is going fast, so don't wait. Join over 500,000 happy families who've discovered the magic of Guardian. Shop now at guardianbikes.com. That's guardianbikes.com.